Okay, so I will review some very classic results in covariant formalisms. So since this is introductory lecture on AdS5 and CS5 sigma model, I will not at all talk about recent developments and just mention the very basic stuff that you probably want to know about string theory on AdS5 and CS5 from the worksheet point of view. So I will first talk about, like, quickly about covariant formulation in curved in supergravity curved supergravity backgrounds. Like, first I will introduce the green shorts, and then I will talk about how to extend this to the pure spinner. And basically, this has been the pure spinner part has been discussed by Berkowitz and Hao several years ago. And then I will just specialize to the AdS5 and CS5 background. So the way I will do this is twofold. So first, I will derive the AdS5 and CS5 background from the generic, from first principles, say. So from the generic curved background, so plugging in the background fields. And then I will make a break and consider it a completely different point of view. And I will tell you something about super coset sigma models. And I will construct the same sigma model, but starting from a super coset construction with a PSU supergroup. Okay, so this will be the classical story. And then, okay, once you have this sigma model, what do you want to do? Well, there are so many things to do, but the first thing you want to check is that the sigma model is conformal invariant. And then, if that succeeds, then you can play and study the SCFT. So, I will tell you something about a 10-year-old paper by Nathan and Barton and collaborators that described the one-loop conformal invariance in the covariant formalism. And then, if I have time, I hope I have, I will tell you actually how to extend this stuff to an all-loop proof, so a proof at all orders in perturbation theory. And then, there are so many other things. Like, so there's a whole chapter about the sigma model which concerns quantum integrability, but I don't think I'll have any time to talk about that. So that's a more recent development. Okay, so let me start to talk about the Green-Schwarz sigma model. So I'll consider type 2 superspace, which would be type 2A or type 2B. And later I will just talk about type 2B, which is the one we are interested in. So there will be some. So we will work in the target superspace. So collectively I will call all the target superspace coordinate as Zm. So this is going to be xm, theta mu, and theta mu hat. So these are the curved target superspace indices. So this goes from 0 to 9. This is a Majorana-Weyl spinner. This is another Majorana-Weyl spinner. So if it's type 2A, they have opposite chirality. If it's type 2B, they have the same chirality. So let's write down the sigma model. So the naive sigma model that one would write down is just take the bosonic string and just generalize it to a generic attaching superspace indices instead of just bosonic indices. So let's see how that looks like. Okay, so this is the sigma model. So we will have and di zn dj zn. So this is the worksheet index. I and j is a worksheet index, is a two-dimensional index. And then we have basically two terms. So I call G the worksheet metric. Later I will just drop all the stuff and work in conformal gauge, but just to begin with and set the notation, I will put the worksheet metric. So we have GNM of Z and epsilon IJB and M of Z. So this G and this B are target space superfields. So let me introduce some notation first, and then I will discuss the physics of this, some physics of this sigma model. So if we introduce the target space superfield bind, okay, this is a curved index, this is a flat index, so the flat index will be A, alpha, and alpha hat. So for now, I will just work with the flat index. Then we can consider the pullback on the worksheet of the superfield bind, and let me call them J. So JA is going to be DZM EMA. So this is a worksheet one form. Okay. So then using the superfield bind, I can just go to the tangent space for G and B. So like G. So the definition of this is like G M N is E A. So what's that? E A M E B N eta A B, and for B, this B M N is E M A E N B B B A. Okay, so these are, so the ambient tangent space and the MNN are curved space. Okay, so how do we rewrite this guy? So in terms of this current and this tangent space guys, the Simon model looks like the following. So let me just write it in conformal gauge. Okay, because so I'll drop the metric and use the Z and Z bar notation. So this is the integral in the 2Z. Of J A Z J B Z bar eta A B plus J Z A J Z bar B. So from here I get this term minus J A Z bar J B Z B, B, A. Okay, so this is going to be the Green-Schwarz sigma model, well, it's in conformal gauge, on a generic curved background. Now, what is, so first let me make contact with the Green-Schwarz sigma model in a flat background. So what happens in a flat background? So in a flat background we will have some non-zero components of the super B fields, but the components of the super B field along the bosonic direction, like BMN, is the target space Neve-Schwarz flux, Neve-Schwarz two-form potential. So it's vanishing in a flat background. So why GMN, the lowest component of the super field G with components MN, is just the target space metric. So in flat space, what happens is that we will have some special values for these guys that we recognize from Nathan's lecture. So JAZ is going to be pi AZ, the supersymmetric momentum, which is dx plus theta gamma the theta. And J alpha Z is going to be the theta alpha. And so in flat space, we have a Vesse-Dumino term as well. So we have some non-vanishing component of the B field, even in flat space, which are not, of course, they cannot be the vector components, so they were going to be spin or vector or spin or spinor. In particular, so let me write them down. So we have B A alpha, so this is theta gamma gamma A alpha. Then we have B A alpha hat, so this is minus theta gamma A alpha hat, theta hat actually, because this is the other guy. And then we will have a B alpha beta hat, which is theta gamma, theta hat gamma, contracted components alpha beta hat. So if we plug this guy in here, you will get the Green-Schwarz sigma model in a flat background. Now let me just mention that when we will go to ADS background, we'll have this will vanish, and we will have just this non-vanishing, but with a different expression. All right. So of course, as you know, so this action has too many fermions. So because these are 16-16 but only 10 bosons, so if you want to recover space-time supersymmetry, you have to impose some fermionic symmetry. So we'll not get into details. So this is Siegel's kappa symmetry. So the thing is that this action is only invariant under kappa symmetry when the background superfields, the background B field and its curvature H, and the background curvature, all the background curvature satisfy some special constraints. So satisfy supergravity constraints. So for instance, just one of them is that okay. So for instance, the H field. So okay. So if you impose kappa symmetry, then. So we will have like a super diffeomorphism, so kill two of these guys.
You made the same, you said in order to have space time supersymmetry, you need kappa symmetry. That's not. You meant in order to have Wolschitz supersymmetry, you need kappa symmetry.
No, there's no Wolschitz supersymmetry. Yeah. There's no Wolschitz supersymmetry.
Well, you made the point that you need equal number of axes and thetas, but you didn't say why. But you said why.
So I have, so let's say left movers, I have 16 thetas and 10 axes.
Yes.
So I will need a symmetry that kills half of the thetas. Because on shell, I want to have in the spin the same number of fermions and bosons.
Why?
Because of space time supersymmetry.
No. Wolschitz supersymmetry tells you have equal number of Wolschitz bosons.
Right, so, okay, sorry. I retract this statement, and the correct statement is that if I want to have space-time, if I want to, okay, get the same number of, okay, the space-time equations of motion, okay, for the background fields, which put the background theory on shell, which means I recover space-time supersymmetry, I have to impose kappa symmetry. So this is the correct statement. So if I impose kappa symmetry, I get. So the way it works is the following: I get some constraints on this background fields. For instance, I get this kind of constraint. Okay, so what is that? A constraint that relates the space-time torsion to the H field, and the same for the alpha hat stuff. So what happens is in n equals 2, d equals 10 superspace, this kind of constraints that I get included in the Bianchi identity give me the space-time equations of motion for the background superfields. So the kappa symmetry imposing me the torsion constraints put the background fields on shell. So kappa symmetry implies that the background superfields are a solution to supergravity equations. So this is what I mean. Okay, is that right? Okay.
I mean, I think the usual statement is you want to get Lycon gauge reinsurance. Lycon, that's why you kappa.
Yeah. Okay, if I go on the Lycon gauge, then I eliminate two axes and eight theta, so I get on the left movers I get 8 and 8, and on the right movers I get 8 and 8. So that's the statement. All right. So this is the Green-Schwarz. Okay, so now what we really want to do is we want to go to the pure spinners. As Nathan said, in flat space, what you do is just you introduce some conjugate momenta for the thetas, and then that's the way to go to the pure spinner. So the recipe to construct the Wolschitz sigma model for the pure spinner sigma model from the Green-Schwarz sigma model is the following. So I take the Green-Schwarz action, which is the one I written here, where this guy satisfies the background supergravity constraints, and I add to this some other terms. So the other terms are the following. So I add some other terms for the matter fields, and then I'll have to add also other terms for the ghost fields. Okay, so the pure spinner action, the matter part of the pure spinner action is going to be, so the Green-Schwarz action, so I'm always in conformal gauge in the pure spinners, and then I will add some conjugate momenta to the thetas that I call D. So, and I add the following action, okay, alpha, the alpha hat, the alpha hat, okay, And then these conjugate momenta for the thetas, they also couple to the background Ramon-Ramon flux. So this is a new feature of the pure spinner formalism, that we have this vertex operator that they call P alpha beta hat, that couples that is the way the Ramon-Ramon flux couples to the worksheet fits. Okay, so let me first make a comment. So this form of the action for the matter part.
But I mean, already in the Green-Schwarz string, you have the Ramon-Ramon flux is coupled.
Yeah, but we don't have the conjugate momenta to the thetas.
Yeah, I know.
So this is the way, okay. So this is the way the Ramon-Ramon flux coupled to the conjugate momenta of the thetas. Yeah, in the like. Okay, so like. The way you get it in the Green-Schwarz is kind of indirect, because you have the Ramon-Ramon bispinner, and then if you put it into the Bianchi lattice in the torsion constraints, you relate the Ramon-Ramon to some components of the B field, and in fact that's like in Metzayer titling, that's the way.
Yeah.
It fits in the other background. Yeah.
It's everywhere.
It's, of course, it fits in all the other background superfields, but in the pure spinner, you actually get it directly coupled to the conjugate momenta to the theta. So this is a vertex operator that you don't have in the Green-Schwarz. So the same form of the action holds for so formally this is the way the background the Ramon-Ramon flux couples to the worksheet action in both the hybrid and the pure spinner sigma model. So the matter part look like this in all different dimensions, when of course you have to take the appropriate superspace and put the appropriate background fields, but it formally looks exactly the same. So the difference here with respect to the hybrid is the ghost part.
Sorry, but the yes. Ramon-Ramon fields also enter another parts of the action. This is not the only place where the Ramon-Ramon field enters. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It enters to the J's and the Green-Schwarz part as well. So it's not a single term.
You mean it enters in the best dominant term through the
metric, yeah, it's metric, everywhere.
Yeah. Like, yeah, no, sure, okay. I just mean that this is the vertex operator for the Ramon-Ramon flux that couples to the conjugate momenta, which is not there in the Green-Schwarz, but you have it in the covariant formalism, because you have the conjugate momenta to the theta. This is the safe statement. Do you agree?
I mean, but there's no qualitative difference between the one or the other.
Let me tell you that this guy, so how does this guy look like? So this is the Ramon-Ramon flux direct. So, okay, so.
I have one term in addition.
Yeah, that's one term in addition.
In addition to 100 of terms.
You have all these superfields. You have the capital E's, you have the B's, you have the G's. Now you have one new superfield, capital E.
Yeah. Yes.
On shall they all get related, and the lowest component of P is the Ramon-Ramon field. But of course, because they're all related, it appears all of them. Yeah. But you have one new superfield.
Yeah. So the same is that you have a new vertex operator which looks like this, that is not there in the Green-Schwarz, and it's there in the covariant formalism. So what is this superfield P alpha beta hat that I just wrote down? So this is a bispinner superfield. And when we expand it in the basis of the bispinners, for in this case I'm just looking at the type 2B where they have the same chiralities, we're gonna have all the Ramon-Ramon fluxes in the background inside here. So how does that work? So so it's a bispinner. We expand this in the basis of the gamma matrices. So the basis of the gamma matrices is like is as follows. So we have gamma m. Alpha beta fm, so this is the one form flux. Then we have gamma m and p, so this is symmetric, this is anti-symmetric, f m and p, so this is the three form flux. And then we have gamma m and p q r alpha beta hat f m and p q r, and this is the five form flux. So we have some coefficients here because we have to take care of stuff, but this is the idea. So, So you see that you just plug your values of the fluxes, and then you get this vertex operator, and then you have to turn the crank on the Bianchi identity and the torsion constraints, and then you reconstruct the whole sigma model. So this is what I'm gonna do. in a few seconds. So first, let me tell you what's the coupling of the ghosts, of the pure spinor ghosts, to the background fields. So the full action is going to be this one plus the ghost action. So the ghost action is constructed with the variables that Nathan was talking about. So we have the pure spinors lambda and their conjugate momenta that I call W. So the weight couples is the following. So let me first write it and then I'll explain what is this. So it's W nabla bar lambda plus W bar, W hat nabla lambda hat plus R M N P Q N M N N P Q plus some extra stuff that I'm not interested in because it doesn't end in the DS5 and CS5 background. So what is this nabla hat? So this is the covariantization of the flat action. So nabla, I call nabla alpha beta, is equal to the z delta alpha beta. So this is the flat action, if you remember. And then we have the pullback on the worksheet of the spin connection in the spinor components that rotates the spinors. So this is just so this is just the Zm omega m alpha beta. Okay, and this is the Riemann curvature. So the Riemann curvature couples to the pure-spinor Lorentz generators. So this is going to be just the covariantization of the flat action with the closed ring vertex operators. Yeah, sorry. So this is the left moving Lorentz generator. What is this? N M N is 1/2 W gamma M N lambda, and this is the same for the hatted variable. So the Lorentz generators of the pure spinors coupled to the Riemann curvature, and this term is crucial for conformal invariance. We'll see at the end. So let me summarize. So what's the pure spinor action in a curved background? So it's going to be given by this part, which is the usual Green-Schwarz part with the best Zumino term. And then we will have this part, which is the additional coupling of the Ramond superfield P to the conjugate momenta. And then finally we will have the ghost part. Okay, then we will have some few extra pieces, but I'm not writing all the stuff otherwise. And they will not enter in the ADS5 and CS5 background. Okay, so the sum of these three is the pure spinor sigma model.
What about the dilaton?
Sorry. Good remark. So the dilaton couples to the worksheet with the Fredkin-Seidlin term. So you don't have it in the Green-Schwarz because it breaks kappa symmetry. However, here, in fact, let me write it down. I have a dilaton superfield, whose lowest component is the dilaton. So the action is, so we'll have Fredkin-Seidlin term. So this is this superfield, whose lowest component is the dilaton, and it couples to the worksheet curvature. Okay, so this is needed for a conformal invariance at higher loops. Okay, so in the ADS5 and CS5 background, this is just a constant guy, so that's just counting basically the genus expansion of the partition function as usual. Okay, so this is also there, but since it's constant, I'm not just writing it down because I'd be working at 3 level anyway, classically. So. All right, so this is the Green-Schwarz. So this is the sigma model. And we'll also have BRST charge. So the BRST charge is going to be the same as the BRST charge that Nathan was talking about. So this is going to be the integral of lambda alpha d alpha plus integral lambda hat alpha hat. Okay. So BRST charge action. So now what's happening? So I told you that for the Green Schwartz, when we impose kappa symmetry, the action is only kappa symmetric when the background superfields satisfy certain constraints which put the background supergravity fields on shell. So the same actually happens here. So if you impose that the action is, so this full action is BRST invariant, and you worked it out, you will see, so you impose that, okay, so, okay, I'm not entering into details, otherwise I never get to the interesting point. So what happens is that the BRST invariance on the action imposes, again, just like kappa symmetry, the supergravity constraints that put the background fields on shell. So BRST invariance on the action implies that that we have a solution of supergravity. All right, so that's it for the introduction. So now we wanna see how the sigma model looks like in the ADS5 tensor spy background. So what we wanna do, we just plug the background fields that we know in ADS5 tensor spy and see how the sigma model then is gonna be written. So okay, so in this SS5 background, which background fluxes do we have? So we have a 5-form flux. So we're going to pick this guy here. So okay, so we have a 5-form flux, which is, is 1 plus star, and C, and the units of fluxes, and then volume of the sphere, and by the radius of the sphere. So now the radius is just string n to the 1/4. We're gonna plug this guy inside here, and we write down the expression for the vertex operator. So the expression for the vertex operator that we get from here, just you plug and you get p alpha beta hat equals a gamma 0 1 2 3 4 alpha beta hat divided by g string n to the 1/4. So this is the value of that this background superfield is taken in this ADS5 tensor background. So it turns out that let's introduce some notation. So I will call this matrix gamma 0 1 2 3 4. I will call it eta alpha alpha hat. Okay, so this is the value of the background flux. So the important thing here is that this matrix here has rank 16, which is the same number of variables that we have for the alpha and the alpha hat. So this is the keep in mind this thing, that this has rank 16, and then in 1 second I will tell you what's the consequence of this. So now if you take, if you plug this guy, as I said before, if you plug this guy into the Bianchi identities and the supergravity constraints, you see that that you will have a non-zero component of the B field as well. And this is equal to beta alpha hat equals, so this is going to be B alpha beta hat. So we couple the alpha and the beta hat. So this is P. Okay, P to the minus 1 alpha beta hat. So since this is rank 16, I can actually invert it. And I get this. So this is basically the inverse matrix of eta alpha beta hat. And this is going to be 1 half G string n to the 1/4 eta alpha beta hat. So we're going to have this guy plugged inside there, and this guy plugged inside the Vest-Zumino term. So this is going to be the Vest-Zumino term in this background. All right, so now actually, I just want to get rid of this extra G-string n stuff. So what I will do is, you see, this is G-string n to the 1/4 in front of this term, the spinorial part here. And this is G-string n to the minus 1/4 in front of these guys here. So I'm going to rescale all of the fields. I'm going to rescale J-A, J-alpha, J-alpha hat, and these by G string n to the appropriate power, like 1/4 for the bosons, 1/8 for the fermions, and like 3/8 for the D's. So what happens is that I just plug all this G-string n just in front of the action. Yes.
How this B alpha beta hat is related to that one?
So yeah, to
this red one, yes. You have white one and...
Right, so this is the flat space one, this is the...
Yeah, but
this is the Eddie Seidensess 5 value.
The limit, they should be related, right?
Somehow. Right, that's kind of a story in which you have to so the way to recover the flat space sigma model from here is you have to take the torsions and take a particular scaling limit of the torsions and you get back to the flat space.
I think they are different because that one has theta squared, and to the right you have the completely bosonic expression.
Yeah, so the way you relate to the fields is not, you don't relate the Bs, you relate the torsions that you get from these fields. And you take a scaling limit. Actually, what's the story there? I don't remember the exact story. Maybe Nathan remembers.
It's probably just a gauge transformation.
Yeah.
It's a gauge? Okay, sorry. I didn't remember that. Okay.
Yeah. So as you said, the torsion you scale, and then you have to make the gauge. You have to make the gauge choice. So in ADS, is the gauge choice in which B A alpha is zero.
Yeah.
Back on, you can't make that gauge.
Okay.
So once you gauge away BA alpha, it will force the alpha beta hat as well.
Okay. All right. Let me finish this point. So when you plug all the guy, when you scale all the fields, you get basically that you drop all this dependence on the string n. So let's get rid of this. Ah, sorry. Okay, you just keep the radius in the string n. So 1/4. And you plug all the stuff in front of the action so that you get in front of the action square root of lambda, where lambda is the gauge theory of coupling. So let's call alpha so square root of lambda is r square over alpha prime, where r is g string n to the 1/4, where I wrote on the other side. So this is the gauge theory of coupling. Okay, so you see that the inverse coupling of the sigma model is the gauge theory of coupling, so fine. We are fine with this. So and the way the string coupling and the end dependence enter is okay, so from the ADSFT dictionary. Okay. So we have this observation that we have this this background field there and this superfield has rank 16. So since it has rank 16, that means that the action for the Ds is Gaussian. So we can actually integrate them out. So we integrate them out, and when we integrate them out, we get the following. We get the D is equal to... from the d hat equation of motion, you get that what happens? That d is p to the minus 1 j hat. So d is p to the minus 1 j hat. And the other one, d hat, is minus p to the minus 1 j. Okay, so what you do now is you replug back these guys here. And what you find is... a part of the action which adds up to the best domino term. So in particular, with the correct coefficients and everything, this part of the action, using that one, becomes equal to eta alpha beta hat j alpha z j beta hat z bar. No, sorry, it's the other way. It's the other way around. So it's j alpha z j beta hat. J alpha z bar, j beta hat z, and then you see that here, let me plug the correct values here. Now I'm plugging this background field inside here, so this is eta alpha beta hat, so this is alpha beta hat Is that okay? Yes. So now we have a 1/2 in front. Yeah. So let me pay attention to the coefficients now. So we have 1/2 in front of here, 1/4 in front of here.
So here we get
1. So now we can sum this guy to this guy. So from minus 1/4 we get plus 3/4. So let me rewrite this. When you sum this term to this one, let me rewrite it because it's getting messy. So we have plus 1/4 eta alpha beta hat times j times j alpha j z bar beta hat plus 3/4 eta alpha beta hat times jz bar alpha jz beta hat. Is that right? Yes. Okay. So now you see that we have a kinetic term for the thetas, because before we just had the J alpha, which morally speaking is like the theta, was like a Vesdomino term, so no dependence on the worksheet metric. Now we mismatched the coefficients, so we actually get some equations of motion for the thetas. Okay, and we got rid of the conjugate momenta. Okay, so this is going to be the matter part of the action in the ADS5 tensors 5 background. Okay, so it's very simple. It's in terms of this Metzger Seidling current. Okay, so we can also plug these guys into the BRST chart because we're just integrating them out. So we plug these guys into here, and what we get is that we get J alpha hat eta alpha alpha hat plus integral of lambda hat alpha hat j alpha bar z bar eta alpha alpha hat. Okay, so this is the BRST chart. Okay, so the matter part. Okay, so this is the BRST chart, and this is the matter part of the action in the ADS5 tensors 5 background. Okay. So now I will introduce a little bit of notation. So let me introduce some notation about the target space generators. So we have the generators of the target space superspin 3T alpha T beta. They close on gamma A alpha beta Tm, the translations, and this is same as T alpha hat T beta hat. Okay, so this is supersymmetry algebra. Then, because of the Ramon-Ramon flux, T alpha and T alpha hat that in flat space commute, now they have a non-vanishing commutator, which is proportional to the Ramon-Ramon flux. So we have a T alpha T beta hat equals 1/2 gamma A B gamma 0, 1, 2, 3, 4 alpha beta hat T A B. So these are the Lorentz generators. And then let me introduce the following notation, in which I take as a super trace of these generators T A T B equals eta A B. And then I introduce the supertrace of T alpha T beta hat equals eta alpha beta hat. And the TABTCD equals eta eta ABCD anti-symmetrized minus the one with the other guys. So the way I'm doing this is because I want to introduce now this notation for the worksheet fields, which is let me call J0 for reasons that will become apparent in 5 minutes, I will give some numbers to this background to this worksheet currents attached to the generators. So this is going to be JAB, TAV. Then J1 is going to be J alpha, T alpha. J3 is J alpha hat, C alpha hat. And the J2 is JA, TA. Okay, then the pure spin, then the ghost variables I will call W alpha, eta alpha, alpha hat, T alpha hat. Lambda, I will call lambda alpha, T alpha. And the same for the hatted variables with the appropriate contractions. So in terms of these definitions and this definition for this bilinear of the generators, for this, so this super trace, the full action, which is the matter part here, plus the ghost part here. So actually, will be written as follows, so only in one line, so we can cancel all the stuff there. So this is going to be square root of lambda by 2 pi, integral of, so we're going to have 1 half, J2 bar, from here, you see this reproduces JA, J bar B, eta AB, from this definition, plus 1 fourth, J1, J3 bar. This is going to be the term with the 1/4 in the matter part of the action. Then we have 3/4 J1 bar J3. This is the other term there. And then we have the ghost part. We're going to write it in this way. W nabla bar lambda plus W hat nabla lambda hat minus N hat. Okay, so I just have to explain to you the last part of the action. So when we specialize the ghost part of the action to the ADS5 tensors 5 background, we say we have covariantized the flat ghost action. And so how does this look like in the ADS5 tensors 5 background? So the ZM omega M alpha beta is 1 half J A B Z gamma A B alpha beta. So you see that, so this term here, because of this super trace notation, contracts the J A B indices with the N AB indices. Now I'm going to the tangent space here, and I reproduce this term here. So let me explain. Nabla lambda is D lambda plus J0 N. So J0, you see that this is what I call the J0. So it couples to N because I pick up from this gamma AB a W on one side and a lambda on the other side, and I reproduce the Lorentz generator for the pure spinors that couple to the spin connection. And where I defined N, so let me write here. I defined N is, according to this notation, is given in this form. So this is the anticommutator of W and lambda. So, and then finally, the Riemann curvature is constant in this background and is given by the anti-symmetrized product of the etas with a plus sign in the ADS part, with a plus sign with the legs in the ADS and with a minus sign with the legs in the S. And that reproduces this term here from the coupling to the Riemann curvature. So this is the way the pure spinor action looks like in the ADS5 and SS5 background. So we have the matter part with the bosons and the fermion currents, and the ghost part with the coupling to the curvature. Okay. So now I got this action from first principles. Say I started from the green short, quantized to a curved background, then I added some stuff, which is the prescription to couple the pure spin over sheet variables to the background fields. And then I integrated out some of the guys because of the particular Ramond-Ramond flux that I have. And then, okay, introducing this notation, I could write the action in this way. So now I will go to a completely different story, and I will tell you how to construct sigma models on the super coset. And at the end of the day, I will, with this prescription for sigma models and super coset, I will just reproduce exactly the same action. So this will have an interpretation in terms of the PSU super coset. Okay, so let me cancel everything. Okay.
This will be literally at the end of the day, right?
Sorry?
Literally at the end of the day?
No, actually, no. Very quick. Like 10 minutes? And then I will tell you, I will sketch the computation of conformal invariants once we understand. Okay, so the super coset is interesting because from the conformal from the beta functions, I will get some quantity that will be directly related to some properties of these supergroups that I will discuss, and then we will see why the beta functions are zero for these supergroups, but not for other supergroups, for instance. So that's why I'm going to tell you about the supercoset. Okay. So let's consider one supergroup, which is PSU 2,2/4. So the supergroup has some bosonic subgroups, which is SU2, 2, and SU4. So this is the conformal group, and this is the R symmetry of n equals 4. And then we have 32 fermions. The superly algebra of this supergroup is going to have matrices in the fundamental representation, which are 8x8 matrices, but they're actually super matrices because this is a supergroup. So let me write them in this way, in the block diagonal form. So this is a bosonic supermatrix, means that the guys in the diagonal are bosonic matrices, and the guys in the off diagonal are fermionic matrices. And the opposite is if this is an odd degree supermatrix. So the condition for this supermatrix to be in the Lie algebra of PSU is that trace of A is zero, trace of B is zero, and then we have a hermeticity condition at m dagger is minus m, that gives me that this A dagger is minus A, B dagger is minus B, and relates me the dagger of this to this one.
Cannot literally impose trace A and trace B to zero because there is some central charge.
Yeah, right. So there's no matrix representation.
Commutation relations.
Sorry?
That equation would contradict commutation relations. Trace A equals zero equals trace B.
Yeah, because I'm not using the super trace. So there's no really matrix representation for PSU, but I will work anyway with this one because that's the way. Okay, because of the P in the PSU, there's no way to impose this relation that is exactly what you said. But let me work with this one anyway because that's very very convenient to get to the point, which is the sigma model. So your observation is that if I introduce the super trace of M is the trace of A minus the degree of minus 1 to the degree of M, the trace of B. So if I impose that the super trace is 0, which is the S in the PSU, I remove the guy which is 1 minus 1. But you see that I cannot remove the guy, which is 1-1, which is the P in the PSU, which is central extension, and this I have just to remove it by hand. So if I impose this one, I automatically like keep the problem.
What is the commutator in the realtor?
Yeah, I will give you the commutation relation for only the generators which are not removed by this relation. Okay, so this superalgebra has this super important property which is that it's got a decomposition according to a Z4 grading. We check as follow. So this omega applied to M is the following transformation: is J A transposed J minus J Y transposed J J X transposed Y and J B transpose J, where J is a 4x4 matrix, which is 1 minus 1, 0, 0. Okay, so you immediately see that since these are already unitary matrices, and now I'm posing a symplectic invariance constraint, so the invariant subgroup of this action will be just the USP for times, sorry, USP 2,2 times USP 4 subgroup of this bosonic subgroup, but that's just SO1,4 times SO5, okay, which is the Lorentz group of ADS 5 times S 5. So you already see where I'm heading towards. So USP is the opposite of PSU, but it's not really related. Okay. So if I can decompose the Lie algebra according to this grading. So what happens?
I'm sorry, what's the grading? Can you see concretely? Is all the operations 4 times gives you 1?
Yeah. So the way it works is the following. I have the, let me call the Lie algebra of PSU G. Then I decompose this into eigenspaces of this operation. So I will have 4 eigenspaces, in which H0, for instance, is this one that I just told you, because you immediately see it. H1, H2, and H3, where 0, 1, 2, 3 is the eigenvalue with respect to omega. So omega on k is going to be I to the k times HK. So this is the important property of this subgroup.
Are you working with the complexification?
Yeah, I guess I'm working with PSL4/4 actually. Yeah. And then I can take some real representation on top of that. Okay. So now I can take commutators of the guys inside these subspaces, and I see that they respect the grading. What's up? So for instance, if I take the commutator of some guy in the M grading subspace with N grading subspace, this is going to be included in H N plus N mod 4, because this is E4. Okay, this means that if I take a guy in H0 and I take a commutator with a guy in H1, I will get the guy in H1 and so on. And then also, let me introduce the supertrace notation. So the supertrace of a guy HM with a guy HN is only non-zero when M plus N is equal to zero modulo. Is equal to zero modulo mod four. Okay. So for instance, the supertrace of JA of of a guy of grading 2 with a guy grading 2 is non-zero. And so on and so forth. All right, so there's an important thing that I want to mention here, is that I haven't told you about the hermeticity condition, but just let me just mention this, that according to the hermeticity condition, the Hermitian of H1 is going to be into H3, is going to be belonging to H3. So these are bosons, so the even gradients are bosons, and the odd gradients are fermions. So H1 and H3 are fermions, and H0 and H2 are bosons. So this relation is going to be extremely important for the pure spin or formalism. I will not talk about that, but okay, how can I make this story short? This is discussed in the last paper by Nathan. And this means that basically in the ADS phi and set phi background, unlike the flat background, the Hermitian conjugate of the left moving pure spinor is the right moving pure spinors, because the left moving pure spinors will belong to H1 and the right moving pure spinor will belong to H3. This means that in the ADS phi and set phi background, unlike the flat backgrounds, we don't need the non-minimal formalism to compute scattering amplitudes. So it's much, much easier because of this relation. But okay, for this is just a comment for the experts, maybe. Okay, so now we're going to construct a sigma model out of this stuff. So, okay, so first of all, what's the supercoset we're going to choose? Well, we're going to model the gauge invariance by the invariant subspace of the BSU supergroup. So see, this is the Metzaev type in supercoset. It's that PSU 2 / 4 divided by SO 1.4 times SO 5. So this is what we are going to construct. Okay, so we're going to introduce this Metzaev-Seidlin current, which are G minus 1 dg, where G
Cartan forms.
Sorry. Yeah, at the end of the day, they will become the Metzaev-Seidlin current, but they are Mare Cartan forms, of course. Yeah, of course. okay, but those are called the Metzaev-Seidlin currents at the end of the day. Okay, so G is an element of the PSU group. So the Mare Cartan forms are in the Lie algebra, so we can decompose them according to this gradient that we discussed. So this is going to be J0 plus J1 plus J2 plus J3, and you already start to see why I used that notation. Okay, so these are Lie algebra valued. And because of this definition, we have the Mare Cartan equations, which are identities satisfied by these currents. But because we have this grading, we can decompose the Mare Cartan equation, which is dj plus j where j equals 0, according to the Z4 grading of this the algebra. So that's extremely convenient. For instance, I just write down one of those. So let's see, dj1, look at the pairings of the gradient. So this is going to be J0 y J1 plus J1 y J0. Plus what? Well, 3 plus 2 is 1. So this is J3 y J2 plus J2 y J3 equals 0. So this is the Mare Cartan equation for J1. And the same for the rest. I'm not writing them. All right. So what we're going to do is we want to construct a supercoset, which is G mod H, where H is this bosonic subgroup of the PSU, which is invariant under this gradient, which is the invariant locus of this Z4 operation, so that's SO1.4 times SO5. Well, that means that we're going to impose this gauge invariance on the Mare Cartan form. So this is just d lambda plus j lambda, where lambda belongs to H naught. Fine, so what's the gauge invariant action that we can write down? Well, it's just an action whose total gradient is zero. So we can take bilinears of this current such that the total gradient is zero. So let me write down the Green-Schwarz action. So the Green-Schwarz action has a term which is a kinetic term for the bosons. Okay, so the bosons in the coset are just the H2 because they modeled out by the H0, the other are fermions. So I'm gonna write this down as follows. So wedge star J2. And then this is a Green-Schwarz sigma model, so I cannot write down a kinetic term for the fermions, or I screw kappa symmetry. And then what I do is I write down a Vesdumino term. So, okay, so this is going to be integral in the 2 sigma, and this is going to be integral in the 3y, say, of a 3 manifold whose boundary is the string worksheet as usual. And let's do. The Vesdumino term, I write it, well, that's to have gradient 0, and then of course you have to impose kappa symmetry, but I'm not going to show you that. Okay, so this is the gradient 0 of Vesdumino term that involves the fermion. However, note that, because of the Mollet-Cartan equation, we can rewrite this as a two-dimensional Vesdumino term. So actually, the Green-Schwarz action will look like the following. Okay, so this is the metathesylene action, which is the guy that I wrote here as the beginning of the lecture. Okay, so fine. So I already discussed this action. So how do we... Okay, so now there's a prescription to add some stuff to this action such that we recover the pure spinor action. So what is this prescription? So we introduce some conjugate momenta to the thetas, which I call them D. Let me do this here. So I introduce some D, which is gonna be a D. I will introduce some conjugate momenta to the J1, so let me parameterize the supercoset G as e to the xm tm plus theta alpha plus theta alpha hat. So now this is the gradient 2 guy, and this theta alpha is the gradient 1 guy, and theta alpha hat is the gradient 3 guy. So these are the generators inside these subspaces. Okay. So the conjugate momentum to the gradient 1 guy, I give it gradient 3. Okay, and the conjugate momentum to the gradient 3 guy, I'm giving him gradient 1. Okay, fine. So the way the action looks like now is the following. I will need to add to the Green-Schwarz action the terms that depend on the conjugate momenta. So they look like follows.
You already have the action. Why do you want to use the action?
Actually. Yeah, I can actually... Okay, so... Yeah, sorry, this was just a repetition. So the way this works is the following. I integrate out the D's that I'm not writing down, so, and the final action is this one. Where? Okay, it takes me 1 second to write it down, but... So let me re-describe now this part of the blackboard after talking about the supercoset. So T alpha is going to be the gradient 1 generator. T alpha hat is going to be the gradient 3 generator. So that you see that this commutational relation is 1 1 equals 2, 1 1 equals 2, 3 3 equals 2. this is 1,3 is gradient zero, so that's a generator of the SO 1,4 times SO 5 Lorentz group, and the supertrace is non-zero only when the total gradient is 4, well, 0. So 2,2 is 4, so we have eta AB. 1,3 is this Ramon-Ramon flux eta alpha beta hat, and 0,0 is this combination of this bosonic matrix. So in this way and with this definition, okay, so this is the prescription for writing down a pure spinor action on a supercoset which is constructed out of a supergroup that has a Z4 automorphism and by modding out by the gauge symmetry generated by the invariant locus of this Z4 automorphism. So this the BST charge is the usual BST charge that I write in this form. Okay, with the supertrace, this is lambda J3 plus lambda hat J1. Okay. Okay, so this is very convenient, because if we have different backgrounds that are written in terms of supercosets with the G4 automorphism, we automatically have a prescription to write down a BST invariant pure spinor action in this particular background. So let me just mention that, for instance, you might be interested in studying non-critical superstrings on ADS2, and this is given by OSP2/2 divided by SO11 times SO2, or ADS4, non-critical superstrings. So these are 2-dimensional and 4-dimensional non-critical strings. So this is OSP4/2 divided by SO1,3 times SO2. And since these supergroups emit a Z4 automorphism whose invariant locus is the denominator, whose the Lorentz group of this background times some extra gauge invariance, if we want to construct the superstring theory on this background, this will be automatically given by the following. So let me phrase this in another way. So suppose I write down the most generic action in the pure spinor variables on a particular supercoset with random coefficients. So this form of the action is the unique BST invariant action that I can write down. So all the coefficients are fixed by BST invariance. In fact, the
this operator that you write, it doesn't have any meaning from
the group. Yeah. It has a meaning. So if you take this group element G that I wrote before, Q acting on G is just G lambda alpha T alpha plus lambda hat alpha hat T alpha hat. Okay, so this is the geometric meaning of this BRST operator in the supercoset. In the supercoset sigma model, and from this I can derive all the BST variation of all the guys in the game, so all the currents and everything, just by using this.
Suppose this you know about Q spinners, would I have written down this operator? Suppose I'm, let's say, a math person doing supergroups.
Uh huh.
Would I have come up with that object would be natural from the.
I don't know. Anybody knows some math here?
No, the first time.
I see. Yeah. So, what's the mathematical meaning of this kind of transformation in general?
So you have all of the currents that you use the first time. You don't need beer. You reduce the whole life. What's the name of the lambda? So forget about that. Sorry. You can ask if there's anything nice about the first line there. Mm-hmm. The answer is yes, that there's a holomorphic current. So J3, this D bar of J3 is 0. Okay. And so the D of J bar 1 is 0. So it says holomorphic
current. And what's nice about the second line?
Well, then you need pure spinners, because it obviously has n and n hats. Well, so then, I mean, you need it for conformal invariant and you need it for power.
Yeah, I don't know in the math literature how this guy, if this is called in any way, I just don't know. Anybody maybe knows. Okay, but this is a very nice geometrical expression. Okay. Okay, let me just mention that the BRST variation of the action is given by it's of the Lagrangian is a total derivative. This was discussed in the last paper by Nathan also. And so the action is BRST invariant up to a total derivative, which is actually the so where U is the Dilaton vertex operator, but this maybe Nathan will talk about that. I don't know. Okay, so this is the way the pure spinor action on ADS5 denses 5 comes about. Okay, so now what are we going to do with this worksheet theory? So there are many things that you can do with this worksheet actions. So what are the first ones? So first you have to check consistency of this theory at the quantum mechanical level. Now you see that the action is perfectly fine. We can actually quantize it covariantly, so it's in the conformal gauge. There's no gauge fixing. We have to do like unlike the Metzelder sidling where you have to go to the light cone or choose some other kappa symmetry gauge fixing. So complication becomes really, really hard. And Zeitling can do that probably, and but in the pure spinor action, it's like just—I mean, you just take it as a regular two-dimensional field theory, which is covariant, and then we want to study something quantum mechanically about this. So let me tell you just three results without proving them, because I want to focus on the last one. So there are some results that you can prove at all orders in perturbation theory using BRST cohomology arguments, and these were studied by Nathan. So the first the first one is that you can prove that there are no gauge anomalies, gauge with respect to the to this gauge symmetry. So there are no gauge anomalies quantum mechanically. So at all orders in perturbation theory. The second is that there are no BRST anomalies at all orders in perturbation theory. Okay, so as far as gauge invariance and BRST invariance are concerned, this is a perfectly consistent quantum theory. And then third, you want to study now conformal invariance. Okay. Okay, so the way we're gonna study conformal invariance is that we want to work covariantly, and we want to use the background field method. So we're gonna expand around the classical background value for the group element in terms of fluctuations, and compute the one particle reducible effective action, and see that the divergent part vanishes, so the theory is conformal invariant. So we're gonna first do it at one loop, and this was studied in this paper by Barton, Nathan et al. And by Breno. And then we're gonna see what happens at all loops. If I have time, but probably yes. Let's see. So. Okay, so the comment is that actually what is going to happen is that the matter part and the ghost part are going to be conformal invariant separately. So in particular, this kind of proof of conformal invariance will work for other backgrounds in which we have this structure, but only only for backgrounds with a very particular property for the numerator. So it's not going to work for this, and it's not going to work for this, but it's going to work for the PSU supergroup, and we're going to see why is that in a moment, after we complete the divergent parts. Okay, so let's see how we can understand this computation. So let's expand this group, this coset element G, this group element G around the classical background value G tilde. So I'm going to parameterize the fluctuation X in the Lie algebra of PSU, but since we have this gauge using this gauge invariant, we're going to take the X only in the H1 plus H2 plus H3 subgroups of the Lie algebra, not H0. And this alpha is the sigma of the coupling that so alpha is 1 over the top coupling to the 1/4, which I explained at the beginning of, so this is the tooth coupling. So 1 over alpha squared is the sigma model coupling. Okay, so you expand, so you plug this expression into here, and what you find, actually, let me cancel some stuff, otherwise. Okay, so I'm not going to actually do the whole computation, otherwise it takes me forever, so I'm gonna tell you what's the idea behind this. So we expand this. Okay, so the way this works is like we get e to the minus alpha x, j tilde e to the alpha x, plus e to the minus alpha x, d e to the alpha x. And then we're going to plug this guy inside here and expand according to the grading. So this is in the Lie algebra, so we can expand according to the grading as here. And then we're going to expand the action to quadratic order in the coupling. So what happens is that the independent part only depends on the background currents, so we're not interested in that. The linear part is going to vanish on the equations of motion, and the quadratic part is the one that you are interested in to compute the one particle reducible diagrams. So from the quadratic part of the action in the fluctuations, we're going to read off the propagators. So x of minus p equal alpha over p squared. So this is the propagator for the fluctuations. And then, so what are the kind of terms quadratic in the axis? Well, we have two terms. So we're going to have, this term, which the action is proportional to 1, j tilde, 1, the ground current from here. But then we're going to need a term dx times x, because we're going to have a 1-1 worksheet operator. But then we can also take a term with two currents. So this is one current, then we have terms with two currents. It's going to be j tilde, x, x, with appropriate commutators and stuff. So for instance, one term here is going to be, for instance, I don't know, like j2, and then j2 bar, because this is, for instance, z bar, and then we're going to have a dx1, x1 commutator, and then super traced, and so on. And same for this, blah, 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 blah. So it's going to be long, 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 long action. And then let's see, what are the divergent diagrams? So actually, it turns out that the divergent diagrams are only the ones with the two external legs. Let's look at them. So suppose you have... So what are the diagrams with two external legs? I mean, the diagrams with two external background currents, so from here and here. So we have, for instance, this kind of diagrams. Okay, so from the terms like, dx, x, j tilde, again, j tilde, dx, x. So this is going to be equal to, I hope the notation is clear. So to this diagram, this kind of diagrams. So let's look at the degree of divergence of this kind of. So this is a one loop diagram. So we have a p squared in the numerator and a p to the fourth in the denominator. So this is divergence. So this is, this will have a log divergence. And let's regularize like infrared divergences here. So this is going to be proportional to log of lambda by mu. And then we're going to have also these other kind of diagrams from from this Feynman rule from this. So the Feynman rules from this part of the action, we produce diagrams like this. That will also be divergent. Let's see. So this is going to be proportional to, okay, was that, so simply a propagator, so 1 over p squared, so same log of lambda over mu. But then terms with three external legs and higher are not going to be divergent. Why? Let's look at one of them, for instance. So suppose I take a j tilde dx x, then another j tilde dx x, and then another j tilde dx x. So this looks like the following. So three external legs and propagators. So one j tilde, the other j tilde, the other j tilde, and the contractions. So this is going to be lambda the square p, 1, 2, 3, so p cubed divided by p to the 6th. But this will be a convergence. So and so on and so forth for all the others. So it turns out that the only guys that I have to compute, that to compute for the effective actions, are just these guys, this and this. Okay, fine. So now you have to do that. So you have to take this very very large action that you got by plugging this guy into that guy and expanding at cubic, at quadratic order in the fluctuations. Take all the Feynman rules and compute all the diagrams. So what are the diagrams that you will have? So they are the following diagrams. So for instance, suppose we have bosons, this index A and B on the external leg, which is the gradient two guys, so J tilde A, J tilde bar B, for instance. So we have this, but then we also have the other one, A, B. So if you compute these diagrams, you see that the result looks like the following. So let me first write it, and then I will describe all the terms. So this is Z, Z bar, B, so, okay, so this is, let me write it in this way, R, A, B of G, times log of lambda over mu. And then in 1 second I will tell you what this looks like, a Ricci curvature, right? So, okay. So suppose I take instead now the fermions, for instance, with in the external leg. So for instance, I can take like this kind of diagrams, alpha hat, so j tilde alpha hat on one external leg, and alpha on the other external leg. Then I also have this one, alpha alpha hat. So this is going to be equal to j alpha z j alpha hat z bar, and then I write down in the following way, r alpha alpha hat of g times R alpha alpha hat times log of lambda over mu, and the same for the guy with the other z bar z. Okay, so what is this stuff? So when you actually do the computation, the Feynman rules that you get by expanding the guy and taking all the commutators are just the structure constants of the supergroup that we started with, because those are the couplings in the theory. So this guy that I wrote schematically is R A B and R alpha alpha hat actually looks like the following. So for the supergroup G, this R A B is defined at certain combination of the structure constants. These are supergroup indices. Okay, A P P Q F B Q P minus 2 to the cube. So this is, well, you see, this is the second Casimir of the group, of the supergroup. It's just the same as the, as in the case of the bosonic groups. So let me call this C2 of G. So this is equal to C2 of G times eta AB, where eta AB is the supertrace of the generators in the fundamental representation that I wrote here. Okay. So this is just a group theory definition. So, so what happens? So it happens that the defective action is equal to, let's say schematically, like the classical, plus you see that all these terms are equal to their classical terms, because R alpha alpha hat is proportional to eta alpha alpha hat, which is the same guy that is there in the classical action. R AB is proportional to eta AB, which is the same guy that we have. So this term we also have in the classical action. And what happens is that the full, so all the terms in the matter part of the action will just factorize out all this, all this dependence on C2 of G with the divergent part, and then, okay, this is the result. So if something is renormalized, it's just the radius that is renormalized, because the radius is the, is the coupling. However, now comes the, the fun stuff is that the second Casimir of the PSU n slash n, PSU 2 slash 4, is zero. So, because of this reason, we see that the one loop beta function is zero for the matter part.
I could get this in a more general case, and just didn't know any physics, just start sticking in groups and stuff. To what extent does this depend on how you choose the grading and how you choose the isotropy group?
Yeah, so your question is, suppose that we don't have that C2 of G is zero, what happens in that case?
Yeah, I get.
So I can construct string theories like this non-critical stuff, that, like ADS2, ADS4, or ADS4, for instance, so that the supergroup C2 of this particular supergroup is non-zero. Then what happens? Then the computation is more complicated, because it will happen that so you see that here all the terms vanish separately. In that case, I will have okay, to use the Mare-Cartan equations, which are like word identities, and relate all the different terms, such that I get zero. So that's the idea. So the terms will not vanish one by one, but only because, say, of space-time supersymmetry, you will have zero.
Yeah, but I'm really asking, this only depends on G, so you have some coset, G mod H, it doesn't depend on H, your choice of H at all?
Ah, right, no.
And it also, you, all this stuff, there was some grading you introduced, and it, does it depend any way on how you chose the grading, or something
no.
like that?
That's the way it works. I mean, this, okay, this is because I already started with the BLST invariant action, which is, morally speaking, saying that I chose the correct best domino term, okay, with the correct coefficient. So it turns out that everything factorizes into this group theory factor. So that's why.
Is there any case where we have a critical string theory and C2 is non-zero?
Right. I don't know. So this is... Okay, so... no, there's only, I mean, which kind of backgrounds do you know the supergroup realization? So this one, and possibly like ADS4 times CP3, that's kind of tricky, but also in this case it's super H flat. There's no example in the
that since the background is on shell, the one loop beta function would automatically be zero. And I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah. Of course.
You wouldn't have to do this computation. You already know that the theory is on shell from the kappa symmetry argument. So the beta function has to be zero.
Well, I mean yeah, in principle, yes, but the pure spinner, you don't know the rules of the game, so you actually better compute the beta function, I think. You check the BLST invariance, but, I mean, you don't know what happens. Yeah, you don't, it's not for granted that that the theory makes sense. For instance, I don't know, for ADS4 times CP3, something is going to happen. I don't know what, but that's a completely open issue. Okay, so... All right. So, what happens in the ghost? Maybe you can just conclude. Yeah, so I don't know. I just wanted to tell you about the all loop proof in like 4 minutes. I don't know. Or otherwise, we can get some cookies. I don't know. Whatever. if you want to sketch the old proof, the old loop stuff, I don't know. Or I can just conclude.
Maybe we can just stop the question.
Okay, you can stop.
Does conformal invariance of the Gauss sector depend on the choice of group?
Yeah, so the conformal invariance of the Gauss sector, the denominator of the super Gauss set enters actually. But you see that again because of because you get only Casimirs, what happens is that the full Gauss part, so separately you will have different dependence on the numerator and denominator, but actually what happens is that the part dependent on the denominator will cancel among different Gauss contributions, so among the curvature contribution and the gauge and the covariant derivative here, and again at the end of the day, because it shows Bierstein invariance, the whole dependence will be proportional to C2 of G and will vanish. So in that case, the denominator of the supercoset enters, but then it cancels as well. Yes. So, yeah. I mean, okay. So the whole point of what's the punchline? The punchline is that so I wanted to show you that you can actually use the two spin-off formulas to do explicit computations on the worksheet, and it's actually very, very easy in principle. So you just need to plug the stuff and do, unlike fixing kappa symmetry and business like that. So it's just.
Well, I'm sure that many other people will fix the other way around.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so usually people know the other way around, which is very, very, very hard. But in this case, it looks like, I mean, computations look much easier to me. I don't know. So. Yeah.
Well, yeah, especially the high loops. Well, I mean, we need to learn how to deal with the pure scalars.
Ah, sure. Yeah.
How do you do computations in main short? So, you do some regularization or something.
Well, I mean, the way, for instance, product cycling computation is done is that you have to fix different kappa symmetry gauges in different parts of the to compute different parts of the determinant, say, and that's a one loop computation is very complicated. I don't know if a two loop actually the Green-Schwarz makes any sense at all. So I don't know.
Some two loop calculations.
Sorry. Okay, I don't know that about that computation. So maybe, okay, but you have to play kind of. I mean, in that case, it's not clear. It's not, say, manifest the way kappa symmetry is going to be fixed.
Also, if you expand around particular solutions, these problems can be created.
In the Green-Schwarz thing.
Yeah.
Even in the flat background.
If you spend, say, an ADS around a particular solution.
Suppose you do flat back on that. I think it's hard to flat back on the ADS.
I mean, the whole point here is that you got rid of kappa symmetry, so you completely skip the problem of fixing kappa symmetry classically and then see what happens at one loop for the gauge fixing, blah, 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 blah. So this is completely straightforward. I agree that at two loop you have to worry about pure spinners, okay, but on the other hand, at two loop in a Green-Schwarz, yeah, you know.
is it understood how to create the PSP universe with two entire?
I know, I haven't studied that. I don't think
you have an item or loops.
No. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so there's a proof at all loops, which is based on BST cohomology, and that's an all loop. So that's because now we have BST cohomology arguments that work for gauge invariance, for all these kind of consistency checks, and those are super powerful, and you can just it's one line. It's totally, it's super simple, the computation. So you don't have to do any computation, in fact, to see that it conform invariance at all loop. But then, okay, if you want to do diagram by diagram, I don't know, you have to expand the action also. I mean, at all loop, the action is going to be like, I don't know, many, many pages. So, okay, but I don't know how to handle the pure spinner constraints. Maybe, nothing, I don't know. Because at one loop, the pure spinner constraints doesn't enter into the game at one loop. So maybe at two loops it does, I guess. So did you do the computation? No.
Oh, I know it does.
Yeah, but I never actually did the computation. I don't know.
Quantum integrability. Statement about conformal
invariance. Okay, so there's a whole other chapter of the story, which is integrability of this background. So you can show that there is a Lex connection, which is BST invariant at all orders in perturbation theory, again using BST cohomology arguments. But that's okay. That takes half an hour to explain to you, probably. So I don't know, but I didn't talk at all about that. So it's not related to conformal invariance. It's a completely different story, and it's about the BST invariance of the non-local charges. But it's because you have this BST cohomology argument to prove this BST invariance of the currents at all orders is very simple, actually. It's kind of a cohomology argument. So. Okay, let me mention one last thing, maybe. Okay. Okay, is that I just talked about PSU, but you can study the same formalism on other backgrounds, like this non-critical backgrounds, and then you can prove integrability of all these other non-critical string backgrounds and stuff just by using this kind of the kind of BST arguments or this loop computations, okay, if you're interested.